Okay, first of all, well, thank you to the organizers for being here. I think LA is a wonderful city and I like the area of the university. And then I'm going to divide the talk into three parts. So the first part is a little bit of review on the fracture of aplasia. So let me see what the motivation is. Fracture of aplasia appear as boundary reactions. So for instance, let's look at the classical examples of reactions in the interior. So then if we consider the functional gradient U squared plus a potential in the interior, so this potential W is usually going to be a double well potential. Say that only vanishes at two points, say 0 and 1. Positive everywhere else. Okay, the Euler-Lagrange equation for this functional is just the Laplace of U equals to the derivative of the potential. So then, if we change this functional and we substitute the boundary, this term by a term on the boundary, say we have V to be a double well potential evaluated at the boundary. Here T of U is the trace of U at the boundary of the domain. The Euler-Lagrange equation for this functional is just, okay, U should be a harmonic function in the interior, but the normal derivative is given by this potential on the boundary. And we will see in the next slide that this type of problems give rise to fractional Laplacian. Actually, this is exactly the half-Laplacian equation on the boundary. Okay, that was the motivation. And quick review on the fractional Laplacian. So let's say for S between 0 and 1, we define this fractional power of the Laplacian as the operator given by this singular integral. Now, I have here many terms because I can take several regularizations, but it's not important. What is important is that if we take this as a pseudo differential operator, then when we take the Fourier transform, the principal symbol of the operator is that C to the 2s. So it's a non-integer power. Okay, for instance, if T is the half Laplacian, then when you square it, you obtain the Laplacian. Okay, an important quantity, especially. The Poisson kernel for the fractional Laplacian in the upper half space. So from now on, I'm going to be using coordinates x in Rn. It's the space where the fractional Laplacian is defined. And then we extend to one more dimension, to y in the positive reals. So I'm going to be considering extensions in the upper hyperplane. So depending on who you work with, this is x or this is y. So all the papers are, you have to be careful with the notation. So we define the Poisson kernel in that upper hyperspace as, well, singular kernel with this power. I'm using the notation s equals 1 minus a over 2. So in particular, well, I'll be using both of them. Okay, now this is kind of a hard integral to characterize the operator, to compute the operator. Then it can be also characterized through an extension problem. And this is the nice paper by Caffarelli and Silvestre, is that if you consider powers of the Laplacian that are between 0 and 1, again I relate to A, you can characterize the fractional Laplacian through the following extension problem. Take the divergence of the y to the a gradient u, that is a equals 0 in the upper half space, and u equals 2f at the boundary y equals to 0. Then you can recover the fractional Laplacian of this f, the Dirichlet condition, as some constant time, basically, the normal derivative of the extension u times the weight, and you prove that this limit exists. In particular, when s equals 1/2, a is 0, and you are talking about harmonic expansions. Formula for the extension, use the convolution of the previous kernel I gave you with f. So, yeah, so that's to say you have an explicit formula. And you see what's going on. The fractional Laplacian can be understood as a Dirichlet to Neumann operator. Okay. So, now, let me give you a little generalization. This is a joint work with my advisor, Alice Chang. Okay, so we saw that actually Caffarelli-Silvestre extension problem has a very good framework in scattering theory and conformal geometry because it's precisely the definition of the Panitz operator. And moreover, if you're above, if you're considering fractional powers that are greater than 1, say n plus alpha, when n is an integer and alpha is between 0 and 1, and if you establish the same extension problem, then you recover the fractional Laplacian, not as the normal derivative, but it has another expression with, say, n plus 1 derivatives in here, etc. And don't worry, I'm not going to talk about this, but just to let you know that the proof of this is in conformal geometry. But that's not the theme of this conference. So let me change to something else. Now, Professor Caffarelli was here a few weeks ago and he gave a talk on this subject. So if you can consider the following numerical algorithm that approximates at the limit mean curvature motion. So what you do is that, say, you start with a closed set C naught, and then you define the characteristic function of the set to be 1 inside, 0 outside, and then you solve the heat equation with initial data, the characteristic function of this set. So then you solve the heat equation and you look at what happens at time epsilon. And at time epsilon, you consider the 1/2 level set of U. So that's going to give you another setting here. Let me call it C epsilon. So now reinitiate the problem using this C epsilon as your starting data. If you keep doing this, then you obtain this kind of discretization, and it's proven that if you take the suitable scalings in space and time, then actually the boundary of this domain is moving by mean curvature flow. Now, the proof I know is by Evans, but there's probably many. And what Caffarelli did is that he generalized this if instead you use the Poisson kernel for the fractional Laplacian. He explained that if you are above 1/2, you still get movement by mean curvature. If you are at 1/2, then you move by mean curvature with an anomalous scaling. And if you are below 1/2, you move by integral mean curvature. Okay. So the moral of all this is that whatever you do above 1/2 is going to be similar to the results you know for 1/2. They have a formula that depends. I don't know the exact formula, but
there is a way to do the curvatures.
Yes, it's a way to. It's a new type of curvature, and that generalizes mean curvature. And the trick is that when mean curvature only depends on the values of the surface near point, this new definition of another type of curvature depends on the values on the whole space. But I don't know, I don't remember the exact formula.
Yeah.
curvature you need inwards?
It shrink, yes.
Inwards?
Yes.
Regardless of what the value s is?
Yes. Okay, the scaling of time and space is different as it goes inwards. Boundary.
Okay,
sorry. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this this is not the theme of the talk. I'm just explaining this because it was my motivation to say, okay, whatever happens above one half is going to be similar to what happens for S one half. And then if you go below, you can have similar results, but you have to do non-local, you have to study non-local things. Okay. So now let me get to the theorems. The second part, I'm going to start from scratch and talk about phase transitions models. Before I do that, I introduce the notion of gamma convergence. So I have X to be a metric space and a sequence of functionals defined on X, positive, that depend on epsilon. This epsilon is going to be any countable sequence that goes to zero. So then we say that this sequence of functionals F epsilon is gamma converges to F, the functional F, if all these conditions are satisfied. The lower bound inequality is that for all u in the space and for all sequence that converges to this element u, then the limit of the value of the functional epsilon evaluated at u epsilon is greater than or equal than the volume. And we want this to be sharp, so we prove the upper bound inequality. For all u in the space, you can find a sequence that converges to u and that achieves the value of the functional, well, lim sub f epsilon u, epsilon has to be f of u. Okay, the aim of all this scheme is to find a minimizer for f. So you can see easily that if you have a sequence of u epsilon, each of them minimizes f epsilon, then every cluster point of the u epsilon minimizes f. Now we have to make sure that we have a convergent subsequence. So the strategy in all these problems is that if you start with a, you also need to prove a compactness result of the type that if your u epsilon has energy bounded, then you can, it's pre-compact in X, and then you can find a convergent subsequence. So in the theorems that I'm going to mention, I'll prove lower bound, upper bound, and compactness. Okay. So then, let me go back a little bit in history and talk about classical models of phase transitions. We start with a container omega, and we have two liquids or two different phases of a same liquid, so water and ice. And then they are going to separate. So let me describe them by a function that only takes a function u that only takes values in 0 and 1. So one of the phases or one of the liquids is u equals 0, and the other phase is u identically 1. I fix the volume and it's about the variation function, so I can talk about the set of singularities, the interface, let me call it S of U. Okay, the energy of this configuration is going to be the surface area H2 of the interface times a constant. And the equilibrium is going to be achieved when we minimize F, the surface area of the interface, among all possible configurations. Okay. But then you can have the Kahn-Hilliard model, where instead of having a sharp interface between the two liquids, you allow some thin interface, a thin layer here. So now your function is going to be taking all the values between 0 and 1. So here u is going to be equal to 0, u is going to be equal to 1. But if, for instance, one is water and the other one is ice, then you have in the middle some kind of a slash or mixture between them of what you need epsilon. Okay, so this, has this is the possible configuration of phase values between 0 and 1. And we consider now a double well potential W, as I mentioned, that only vanishes at 0 and 1. Your energy functional going to be given by F epsilon of u to be the gradient u squared, the gradient energy, plus the integral to be achieved when we minimize this f epsilon. Okay, it is easy to understand why this is a reasonable functional. For instance, the potential part is forcing u to take values near 0 and 1, while the first part penalizes the jump. So that's a way to see that this is a reasonable functional. And of course, what you expect is the connection through gamma convergence. So I wrote up here again both functionals, the f epsilon from the Cancellier model, and the f that was measured in the area of the interface. You relate the constants of the problem, then Modica and Mortola prove the famous theorem that f epsilon gamma converges to f and you have compactness. And as a consequence, if you have a u epsilon minimizer for epsilon, then you have a convergent subsequence of u epsilon converging to u. This is going to be the minimizer for f. Okay. So this is the classical model when you have reactions in the interior. Now let me explain another model when you have also reactions at the boundary. And I'm going to consider two phase fluids. So I take two double well potentials, W and V. W is going to vanish only at alpha and beta, and V at alpha prime, beta prime, that they don't have to be the same. So actually here, U is alpha, U is beta. And the energy functional is going to be the gradient in the interior plus the double well potential in the interior, but I'm going to add a boundary term where the trace of U is going to have a jump basically between alpha prime and beta prime. So in general, you are going to have phases at the boundary. That's why they are called two phases, because you have phases in the interior, phases in the boundary. You are going to have here two points, and at the boundary you are going to have V equals alpha prime, V equals beta prime here, and the heuristics, okay, you have U epsilon is going to converge to some U0 in the interior, the traces are going to converge to some V on the boundary, but in general, V is not the trace of U0, as I draw in there.
And now that we know integral constraint on U,
oh yes, fixed volume in the interior.
Fixed volume
in the interior, yeah.
So fixed. So the integral of U has a specified value.
Yes, in the interior.
Okay.
Okay. So this is okay. So then, as you can expect, there is a gamma convergence result for this functional. This was done by Alberto Busiti-Sevicher, that if you take the right scaling, then your functional f epsilon that I described before are going to gamma converge to some functional f, and the compactness condition is satisfied. So your limit functional basically, okay, let's look at the phi above, is going to have a term on the surface area of the interface in the interior S of U. You are going to have a one-dimensional measure of the interface of V, because V was a function on the boundary, and you are going to have a term that measures how different TU is from V. So then this is basically your limit functional. Okay, I want to study this for the fractional Laplacian. This is something I was working with Professor Caffarelli. So we're trying to study the following functional f epsilon. So again, you're going to have a gradient term in the interior, a double well potential in the interior, and the reaction at the boundary. But you add this weight here, the distance to the boundary to the A. Actually, I'm taking S greater than 1/2, so A is negative. So this is basically going to be the energy functional for the fractional Laplacian delta S of the power S. And as you can see, since A is negative, this is a singular weight when you approach the boundary. Okay, so the theorem tells converse to f, where f, basically f is given in terms of phi, and this phi is the same thing as before. So if you are above s equals to 1/2, then you can still achieve the, you will stay kind of local. Okay, now this result has not exactly the right scaling. I have to add positive theta in there. The scaling is with this, but that makes the proofs easy. Well, I think theta equals 0 is still okay, but the proof is more complicated. I haven't had the time to write it down so far.
What do you mean? You're free to choose any scaling of lambda epsilon, any positive value?
Yes. And actually, there are some other results by Morton, where they choose like different scalings here. So for the gamma convergence results,
you don't see that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you see it. But some of scalings are more interesting than others.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out here that this scaling is the interesting one from the point of view of layer solutions. But anyway, the proof should be quite similar. Okay, so let me give you a sketch of the proof of this part. So I remind the functional up here, it has three terms. So basically, if you only have one phase fluid, say that you don't have, you don't see this boundary reaction, then you have a functional in the interior. Okay, it's you have a weight, but it's not that far away from the modica Mortola functional. So that part is not too hard to achieve, because you only look at interior, Then near the boundary, you can slice it and reduce to one less dimension. That's a little standard. And then there are too many ingredients in the proof. So the first one is going to be a singular perturbation of the norm HS. So the norm HS can be written in this form when E is an interval here. So then the first result is that you take a singular perturbation of the norm HS. And so that way you relate with the boundary term. And now the second part of the proof is to relate this integral here back to the original functional. So I'm going to relate this term with this term. And what it needs some new traces inequalities for weighted Sobolev F spaces, because actually V is going to be the trace of this U in the interior. And that's the proof. So let me explain the two main ingredients. So as I said, I consider when E is an interval, I take the term with the norm HS, and then the singular perturbation. So you can prove that with the choose the proper scalings, your functional is going to gamma converge to another functional G with compactness condition satisfied, and this G is given by a constant times the number of points in the singular set of V. Basically, your limit is going to be a function of bounded variation in an interval, so basically it can have a finite number of discontinuities, and you count the number of those discontinuities. Okay, so now the second main ingredient in, before is it was some trace inequalities. So let me remind you the spaces I'm using. So I'm using the W12 Sobolev space in the interior with a weight the distance to a negative power. So it's a singular weight at the boundary. So you can see that here is the gradient term. And then, say, imagine that you can, your omega has part of the boundary can be made flat, and you consider the HS norm of that flattened part. And the norm here can be written as the integral of, well, it should be E, when you flatten the boundary. V of x minus V of x prime. Okay, the integral I showed before. Okay, I was there. If you don't have this weight, then you know that W12 of omega has Now, you are the weight. I couldn't find any results until I went to Google and typed, tracing inequalities for weighted solid spaces or something like that. And I got some articles from Netwind, I think someone from either Czech Republic or, well, somewhere in Eastern Europe, I don't remember exactly where he proved that the class of traces on the boundary of the domain of functions that are in the weighted solid spaces is actually what I want, the space Hs. However, the proof of this Sobolev embedding doesn't give you the exact constant of the embedding. So you need to work a little bit hard and prove that actually the embedding between the weighted Sobolev space and the Hs on the boundary, here P of U is the trace, well, you can find the value of this constant, and it is actually the best constant in some sense. Okay, so you need to prove that. And you do it actually using the Caffarelli-Silvestre extensions. Okay, let me say that that's the end of the proof of the first part. Well, I'm actually quite early, because I was running a lot. And the third part of my talk comes from dislocations. Dislocations are line defects in crystals. So I don't know much about the models, the physical models, but these line defects move depending on the exterior forces or the own structure of the crystal. So the problem I'm interested in is the parabolic here, L is going to be the half Laplacian of the right sign, just for shortness. So before I was considering only the equation, the reaction at the boundary can be written as fractional Laplacian minus the double well potential prime. So again, W is going to be a double well potential. Now here I add sigma, that is the exterior stress, and then I'm going to consider this model in R, and I'm going to take the parabolic part, the parabolic equation. Now, if V is independent of T, this is the Peyer-Navarro model describing dislocations, but I'm afraid I cannot say much about it. But what I'm going to be interested in is what happens when we rescale this equation. So I'm going to take epsilon going to zero, and I take the corresponding rescaling in epsilon. So we obtain this equation here. Now, I will tell you in a moment who is the initial data for this equation, V naught epsilon. So what I want to do is, well, to know that this V has this equation has a solution, at least in the viscosity sense, and I want to study the limit dynamics of the problem. What happens when epsilon goes to zero? Okay, the assumptions. Okay, I'm here, I'm just saying I'm taking a periodic double well potential, but you see it vanishes at the integer numbers, and it has positive curves positively, second derivative positive in there. A bunch of assumptions on sigma. If you don't like them, just take sigma equals to constant because it's not a big deal. And this is actually important. If you take a sequence of points, of n points in R, they are going to be n particles, then we are going to define the initial data for the parabolic problem to be okay, part of the stress, not to worry too much. I'm going to take the sum of y equals 1 up to n of phi of x minus xi naught with the right scaling. Okay, this phi, I will tell you in a moment who it is, is actually the layer solution for the half Laplacian. Okay, so if you take that as your initial data, then, okay, before I say what the theorem proves, I need to introduce another set of equations. So remember that I have given you the initial positions of n particles. So now you are going to solve the following ODE systems of particles. So you take, you find the trajectories for the xi that solve this equation. Gamma is a constant that is going to depend only on the double well potential W, the stress, and this interaction energy, 1 over xi minus xj. Now, the important part of this ODE is this interaction energy here that actually comes from the half Laplacian in some sense. Okay, you solve these ODE systems of particles, you get the xi of t, then you can prove, going back to original parabolic problem for V epsilon, there exists a unique viscosity solution V epsilon for each epsilon. And if you define a new function V naught as the sum from I equals 1 to n of a heavy side function H, so okay, I have it drawn here. This is a heavy side function, step function of x minus the position of the particles, function that depends on time and x. When epsilon goes to zero, the solution, the viscosity solution of the parabolic problem V epsilon is going to converge to precisely this V naught. So somehow the limit behavior of the PDE I presented here for the half Laplacian is governed by the behavior of these ODE systems of particles with this precise interaction energy. Okay, there are some similar results when instead of having here the operator, the half Laplacian operator, if you use here the Laplacian, then you have similar results, but they actually are more complicated because you have a different interaction energy here. It's actually an exponential of exponential type. Well, I was trying out solutions, and that's the solution that's the ODE they have to satisfy. It comes from the problem.
Well, you can think of this as an interaction among the defects.
Yes, exactly.
Somehow this is known in the physics community when they're looking at defects, at interactions among defects in 2D crystals.
Yes, exactly. Yes. No, actually, you know, and on the other hand, there are many works for dislocations of crystals where they use instead the half Laplacian. So this kind of joins both types of results, the ones using the half Laplacian and the ones using the interaction energy.
So you know, V epsilon 0 needs to be monotonic in x, right? Because the limit solution is.
Well. Yes, it's monotonic. And the thing is that almost. The thing is that I haven't told you yet who this phi is, but you will see in a moment. It's actually important. Okay, so let me tell you now who phi is. So the
phi is the layer solution for the half Laplacian with the double potential W. So there is a paper by Cabrera and Solá Morales where you solve the Euler-Lagrange equation for the fractional Laplacian with this double well potential on R, and you want a
going to be an increasing function that at minus infinity tends to zero and at plus infinity tends to one. Let's see that this is 1/2. So the, this function phi is well known and it has precise asymptotic behavior. So that's what you use for all the problem. So what we try to do is to build sub and super solutions for the equation. And okay, what's the first answer for a sub or super solution? Okay, so we just solve, take the sum of y equals 1 up to n of phi x minus xi of t over epsilon. It looks like a reasonable guess.
Xi t is now unknown.
No, it's not. It's just the solution of
it's the solution of the previous.
Yeah. First, you solve the ODE with the in data, and then you solve it, and you think, okay, it looks very reasonable, and because the shape of this field, it's kind of going to converge to the Heaviside function with the rescaling. Okay, but it turns out that it doesn't work. And then you need to add a corrector term. And well, but you work a little bit, you look at the specific asymptotics of phi, and etc., and you obtain a super solution and a subsolution that are built from this guess, and that's basically the proof. Okay, so before I do that, because I'm actually, wow, very fast. Let me say what open problems are on this area. Okay. It's probably true that this same problem works when you replace the half Laplacian by any fractional Laplacian above 1/2. What it's missing is the layer solutions for this new fractional Laplacian. I think Cabré and C are working on those layer solutions, so hopefully we'll be able to use them soon. And then more open question. If we go back to the beginning, okay, first transitions. Here is the first theorem I mentioned of the gamma convergence. So if you take the functional and prove that it gamma converges to something, remember that I was doing only the case above 1/2, because somehow it's the easy one. Because when you go below 1/2, then you need to introduce some non-local quantities. Okay, I think a similar theorem should work, but we need to find out exactly what replaces the limit function. So that's why you need to read Caffarelli's and Sukanidis' paper on the on the integral curvatures. And then more problems. Well, at the beginning I mentioned some connections with conformal geometry. Actually, there is too many questions open in this area, but since they are not numerics and not very applied, I will finish here. So now I can say thank you.